You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Well, here we are for another Neighborhood Archive podcast. Believe it or not, I know it's been quite some time since we've done any kind of recordings here. I know Aaron and I tried to do some, and it's just scheduling-wise, and life gets in the way sometimes. And I can go through my whole laundry list of excuses as to why there's not been more of these recordings shared with everyone. But nonetheless, we're back for another podcast tonight. So with me tonight, I actually have four guests on here tonight. I put together a handful of people that I felt like were, I guess you could say, part of that core when it comes to the Neighborhood Archive. People who have contributed in a variety of ways, from their knowledge to their passions to their the longevity of their attention to the site. So with us tonight, let's start with, let's go way back to the very beginning of the early days here. Eric Scales is here tonight. And Eric, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Tim.
So Eric, tell us real quickly, in just a few words, who you are, why you're here, what you do.
I'm Eric Scales, a professional illustrator. I'm out in California, and I'm, like all of us, a lifelong Mr. Rogers fan.
And I owe a lot to Eric, because Eric was one of the first people who joined me for some of the podcasts that were recorded for the site, and was really one of the people that was very encouraging as the Neighborhood Archive really started to take off. So Eric and I go back a while, even though we haven't talked in a little while. It's good to hear his voice. Aaron Schulke, you guys, if you've listened to the podcast before, you're aware of, you know, of Aaron. Aaron's joined me a few times here as well. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here. Thanks, Tim.
Want to share a few words about yourself as well?
Like everybody that's here, that's the best way to put it. Lifelong Mr. Rogers fan. And then definitely, I mean, I've always been interested in the show, interested in you know, things like that, especially behind the scenes things, production of the show, because, you know, I have a background in broadcasting and that type of thing. And when I stumbled on your site, Tim, on the Neighborhood Archive site years and years ago, I thought, well, here's somebody just as much of a fan as I am. So, and then got involved with you after messaging and those types of things, and so that's why we're here.
Good deal. Third, we have Danny LeBrec, and again, Danny has been on the podcast a time or two, and so we're glad to have Danny here. Danny, welcome.
Thank you very much. Hi, neighbors.
A few words about yourself, Danny?
Also, lifelong Mr. Rogers Neighborhood fan. Grew up in the neighborhood, and heavily influenced by Fred's mission, which was driven by Margaret McFarland, who doesn't get enough credit, I think. And now I find myself wanting to bring back that type of communication into modern-day interactive media. Not only with Fred Rogers, but going back to Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, and Miss Francis from Ding Dong School, and Captain Kangaroo, and all the old school kid show hosts. I love that type of communication, and I think kids deserve a real human voice. And that's the thing that I appreciate the most about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It was
very good.
It was a real person.
Yeah, very good. The new kid on the block. The last but not least, we have Greg Sorvig with us tonight. Greg, welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot. I guess I'm the fifth Fred head here. What we're called, I guess, or no?
Yes, that has to be what we're called.
Yeah, I think Danny actually coined that a while back. So
I've been pushing for it for so long.
Hey, well, I'm glad, but I can bring it back. Again, my name is Greg Sorvig. I'm based out of Carmel, Indiana, just north of Indianapolis. I grew up, I'm 34 now, but I grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and then was a fan at that point. But then I guess now, having a two-year-old, when I had a kid, I think I just reconnected, and that's when a lot of episodes hit, streaming and stuff like that, too. And I felt like I really just connected with Fred on a different level from that point of view as well. But I'd say I'm more of a fan of Fred himself and a lot of his philosophies. And I still love the show, but I'm not I don't have like the sweeping knowledge like probably Tim in the archive. So thank God you have your website. But yeah, I'm the director of film programming for a nonprofit arts organization, and we give an award to studio release films beyond doing Academy Award qualifying film festivals and stuff too. And the new Morgan Neville film from Focus Features, Won't You Be My Neighbor, was viewed by our jury and got the award, and it is fantastic. So that's kind of my neat connection to that. So I'm excited to talk about that movie more, and just love Fred, my two heroes. I call them my two Freds, Frederick Douglass and Fred Rogers. And,
nice.
Yeah, I just like everyone else, I feel like I have a personal bond with them, which is amazing. Like a true, legitimate, authentic role model and somebody that you feel like you can connect to at this unordinary level.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, guys, this is a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this conversation. For those of you listening, what the plan is here is basically kind of like I would have described to these guys earlier on. Really, it's five guys sitting around a table talking about Mr. Rogers, not an actual table, but, you know, the proverbial table and the discussion in the roundtable sense. So what we would like to focus on tonight is just a look at the 50th anniversary. There's a lot going on this year. There's a lot of opportunities out there for people to remember Fred and to honor him and to just reflect on their own Mr. Rogers story. And so in front of me, I've got a list. I've got a list of several of the things happening this year. And I thought we'd just run through some of these things and have a discussion on our thoughts, our opinions, what we're looking forward to, things we maybe question or things that we might have done differently or improved upon or things that we really want to celebrate that are happening. And so I think we start with something very simple. How about the stamp, you guys? Anybody? Let's start with Danny. Danny, what do you think? Did you buy these stamps that came out from the Postal Service recently?
I have not been able to get the stamps yet, but I was very excited to see the release online. They were doing a live broadcast, and did anyone see all of the neighbors that showed up, the original cast? They don't often get, I feel like, the attention they should, but I saw Chuck was there. Mm-hmm. And David was there, and then there's an amazing musical guitar playing by Handyman Nate.
Joe Negri.
His actual name. Yeah, he played his guitar, and it was absolutely beautiful. I thought that dedication was amazing.
I didn't get a chance to see that, Danny, but I had missed it. I was busy at the time, whatever, but I think you can still look at that, too, if anybody's interested. I think it's somewhere online, yeah.
It is. If you go to the U.S., I think it's the USPS or the WQED Facebook page, it's their live video is still on there to where you can view it in hindsight. So what's the plan for these stamps? Are you using them? Are you saving them for Christmas cards? Are you storing them away in your vault to put your kids through college? I mean, what's the plan for these stamps that you've picked up?
Well, Tim, you bought the giant printer sheet, right? So you're just picking one off one by one, you know, just using them.
That thing it came in a rolled tube. It came out of the rolled tube one time, and it has stayed in the rolled tube since then.
Yeah, I have That's the small cool. sheets. And my mom sent me one, which is really sweet. And then people at work, I think we're doing a mailing for something, and our VP development came in. And, you know, it's fun when people associate you with Fred Rogers stuff, but... Yeah, so I think I have two or three sheets. If you went to the USPS website, you can buy kind of the first day issue package, which is a fun memento. It's like the postcard with the stamp, and it says first day, or you can buy the sheets. And I think I'll keep one sheet in a perfect a new state, and then spread the gospel of Fred, if you will, through right some on. Other stamps here and there.
Yeah,
this might sound silly, but did anyone else feel like I love King Friday, but I was kind of surprised it wasn't Fred and Daniel. Like that's the puppet that I feel is like the
iconic. That was going to be my next question. Was like, what are your thoughts on the design? You know, is it what you expected? Is it something that you think potentially could have been improved upon, or is it spot on?
Whenever I see artwork for the neighborhood, I'm always like, oh, I wish it'd be great to see new great artwork for the neighborhood. And they don't do that. They tend to use either really old stuff or photos. And, fine. I didn't even think about it not being Daniel but kind of glad it was King Friday. I guess Daniel's got enough publicity nowadays. So,
it's true.
But I didn't even notice.
Yeah. And I'll be contrarian and say, I would, I guess if I was designing the stamp, it's great as it is, but, I'd even have him holding the trolley instead of, having a puppet.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great point. That's kind of what I was going to say too. Yeah. Is that I thought it'd be, you know, the trolley is more iconic in my opinion.
True. I would agree with that.
But nothing against the design. I like the fact that it even happened, and it's fantastic.
Oh, I do too. Oh, absolutely. Oh, sure. That's nothing. I'm not a negative comment by any means. So.
Mm. Also, the feedback I heard from a lot of post offices and just seeing stuff online. Obviously, we're in this weird online bubble of Fred Rogers stuff, but so many people who went to get stamps said that there was an unprecedented demand, and they sold out so fast. So,
is that right?
That was really neat to hear, too.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Speedy delivery.
It's the post office. Why is it not Mr. McFeely on there? You know,
yeah,
could have
right.
been the spokesperson for this whole marketing campaign for the USPS. So
yes.
So I'll tell you what. Let's move on to something that maybe is still a little lighthearted, but maybe a little more in depth, because I think this is something that everybody has an opinion on, one way or the other, or probably not as neutral. But the news that came out, it's been a few months back now, about the film that's being made, potentially, supposedly, might be happening, going to happen, going to be filmed, a film about Fred Rogers with the starring role by Tom Hanks. Thoughts on Tom Hanks playing Fred Rogers?
Being the movie man here, I'll say, think about it, clean slate, who is the most likable, renowned actor with like a clean bill of health? It's Tom Hanks. So it's kind of funny on one level, that you get this actor who I think similar career, just beloved by so many people. And then it's not somebody, everyone had their wish list with the different actors, and I don't think that hit, but then once it was announced, you're like, oh, I could see that. That's going to be great. So I'm really excited about that. But the funny thing is, you know, it's almost like there was nothing in terms of movies for years, and then now it's almost like there's almost market confusion.
Right.
It's funny they announced that. I remember even when we screened the new documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, and there's another one on PBS as well. But somebody on our jury was like, oh, is this the Tom Hanks movie? I'm like, no, they need more than 3 weeks to make a movie. But that is coming. But I mean, again, and we'll talk about this later, but this is almost like an amazing time, whether you're coming in to be a new Fred fan or long timers or whatever. It's just a really great time, but I'm really excited. I don't think I have any. I have great expectations for the movie, and I have no doubt that Tom Hanks will do a great job.
Does anybody feel like it should have been cast differently?
I don't think so. I can't think of anybody else though off the top of my head that would be better for it. But when I first heard the news of the fact that there could be this dramatization of Fred's life, I thought, well, geez, that's, I don't know how I feel about that. And then I read the news that it was Tom Hanks. I go, oh well, I feel better about that. I ended up feeling better about that. As far as different casting, I'm not sure. Anybody else that might know actors and movies a little better than I?
I think it's a good Hollywood choice movie. You know, it's a good actor for a Hollywood movie that's going to get a lot of attention. It's an actor that everybody knows. I think there are lots of, unknown actors that maybe might have, connected more deeply with the character. Like, we've seen Tom Hanks, play historical characters before. He's always kind of Tom Hanks, but he's still, he knows how to connect that emotional,
And we know Tom Hanks can deeply connect.
We know him. We have a familiar.
Well, and the other thing that made me feel good about it, too, not to jump in one more time, but real quick while I thought about it, was, and I can't remember who it is, there is a short YouTube video somewhere. Somebody had tracked down either James or John Rogers. Anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and he talks about how many times Fred had watched Forrest Gump, right?
That's right. Yep, and how he really, really liked Tom Hanks as an actor. So then I felt a lot better about it then.
Yeah,
and we already know that Tom Hanks has great experience with inanimate object co-stars in Castaway.
That's
so,
right. Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Oh, gonna play well with the puppets and yeah.
Yeah, I had a funny thought about this. So I don't know if I'm going to say the actor's last name correctly, but do you guys know Peter Scolari? Scolaria?
Peter Scolari. Yeah.
Bosom Buddies. Tom Hanks and Peter. I think Peter should be David Newell. I think he would be I think it would be funny at several levels, and I think he would do a really good David Newell if you've seen him in more recent stuff like on Girls on HBO.
Possibly,
he's got a pretty good David Newell going on.
And the other unique thing about this film is it's going to be more of a finite period of time in his life, similar to like Saving Mr. Banks with his portrayal of Walt Disney. So it's going to be his relationship with this person, a member of the press. So it's not going to be, anytime someone hears a movie like a biopic coming out, they imagine this amazing sweeping childhood to deathbed type film. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be like that, but but I think probably Fred, towards the later part of his life, I think it'll be good. But I think people mention over the years Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
You see that? And I have, here's my left field that people gave me crap for online, but I could actually, if pulled off right, Steve Buscemi, I think, could take a kind of a left field dip into the role. I think people know him for like different kind of goofy roles, but if you look at Boardwalk Empire, and I think if the makeup and stuff was done right, I think, I don't think, obviously it's not the number one choice. But that's a random pick that I think would be a kind of a neat dark horse.
I will never see him the same again.
Mr. Rogers with Steve Buscemi eyes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
No, but that's my left field. But here's another unique thing. Did anybody see the Drunk History segment?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now think about this. Both Tom Hanks and Colin Hanks have played Mr. Rogers, or will within the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. So father and son played Tom Hanks.
And the timeline of it, the young Fred and old Fred. I mean, that's...
Hey, there you go.
And you have to think that was totally intentional.
I thought so. Was it?
Don't you think so?
I thought so, but
I assume so. Yeah. I assume the casting of Colin Hanks on that episode was completely intentional, but maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the popular choice, of course, is Jim Parsons. You know, you mentioned that Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory. Yeah. Visibly as a young Fred Rogers, absolutely, he's got the look. But that's the thing is, like you mentioned, Greg, this movie isn't intended to be about the time he's born till the deathbed. It's about a segment of time where he had this friendship, and that friendship was at a time in his life where he was roughly the same age that Tom Hanks is now. And so, to me, it's an amazing cast. I couldn't be happier about it. You know, like you guys said earlier, it's kind of, you think of the nicest person or the most, appreciator, the most reputable person in Hollywood. And Tom Hanks, of course, is right there near the top of the list. But for me, I don't know if this was like this for anybody else, but that casting or that announcement kind of came out of nowhere. I feel like it just blindsided everybody. Like,
I agree.
Tom Hanks?
Well, there's been so many, potential movies in the past, recent past, like it's going to happen and then it would just fall apart.
Yeah.
So for this to pop up and then just feel very definite. Yeah. It did kind of come out of nowhere, but it's
in the internet's a great place for joy to be killed immediately when it comes to the news announcements. And honestly, I think it was a pretty good reaction across the board. I can't remember any really bad stuff too, but that goes to a bigger issue of just the natural virality and, likability of Mr. Rogers and almost anything that's associated with them too online. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stick with the Hollywood theme here. Let's talk about the PBS documentary. You know, there was a lot of Hollywood names that showed up on that. The documentary that aired, what's it been, about a month ago now? Or maybe a little bit longer than that, called It's You I Like. Aired in the evening, and I think some stations may have picked it up and aired it a few times in the following week. But did you guys all get a chance to watch that when it was on?
This is Greg again. No, I unfortunately missed it, the live feed, and I haven't been able to see it yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Eric, did you get a chance to see that out in sunny California?
Yeah, I did. I DVR'd it and kind of forgot about it for 2 or 3 weeks. And I think I had read some, possibly on your Facebook feed, I don't remember, the archives Facebook feed, people complaining that it was not particularly in depth and, but when I saw it, I enjoyed it. I think there was stuff I hadn't seen, and part of me felt a little manipulated by the celebrity commentary. Some of it felt very genuine, but I think, and as sincere as she was, who's the actress?
Sarah Silverman,
the comedian. Part of me felt a little manipulated by the shots of her watching the show and reacting. It was like her reaction shots. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, are we seeing this so that we know how to feel watching Mr. Rogers? Like, well, just show me the clip she's watching. Don't show me her watching it.
It was a very Sesame Street approach, you know, put in a big star to get people to watch, you know.
And it felt
pitchy. Yeah, a lot of random people, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly everybody likes Fred Rogers. Well, most people like Fred Rogers, but you know, some of the folks that came in seemed to, you know, Tim had mentioned this earlier. I forget the director, but the quote was something like, "Yeah, I kind of sort of remember watching."
Yeah, that, you know, like, one of the clips with Judd Apatow where he said they show a clip. And he says, "I'm sure I saw that as a kid." Well, and that was the one part of the entire. I enjoyed the special, I did, but that was the one line that really kind of bothered me because. The thought of, I'm sure I saw that, you know, if it was that impactful that your face is on this special about the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you need to remember that. You would have remembered if you saw it. It wouldn't be, well, I'm sure I saw that, you know. Blah.
Yeah.
That really kind of struck a chord with me. Everybody else on there, I feel like Sarah Silverman, I've read for a long time, is a legit fan of Mr. Mm-hmm. Rogers' Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I've read articles about that in the past. I hadn't really thought, Eric, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about the camera angles of her watching the footage. But I felt like a lot of the other guests that were on there were relatively genuine. But there were just a few times that I thought, you know, is this a publicity grab or is this a celebration of the neighborhood?
Yeah.
PBS, they kind of have to, you know, they're not doing super well financially. And I think a lot of that was, I think there was a little bit of pitch happening in between. You know, there was lots of, hey, this is what we're doing now. And don't forget to send in your money. And you know, certainly that needs to happen, but it felt a little bit like a promotional piece to me. Yeah. And I also really wish that they would have pulled in more of the original cast members. They're around and we never hear from them.
It was it was nice to see Joe Negri.
Missed opportunity.
On there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. That was amazing.
It was really nice
to
see him.
More
of
that.
But Danny, I agree with you. It would have been nice to pull some more people in just to, you know, to have some two cents in there too. I thought it was a very well done documentary, a nice little clip compilation type of a thing there too. A lot of it we've seen already. It was nice to have Michael Keaton on there, of course. Mm-hmm. And about, mm-hmm. Tim helped me out here, maybe 15 years ago or so, he did another one. Is that about right?
Yeah, the America's Favorite Neighbor.
That's the one, yes. I think that was just shortly after Fred had passed away. And they kind of had, they recycled some of the same script out of that. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was well done. I think they could have done more with it, but I think it was a nice little synopsis.
Yeah, without seeing it yet, I feel like if PBS did not do something, I think people would have been really upset. And I think,
absolutely.
It sounds almost like a complimentary piece to the Morgan Neville documentary. And the fact that this is more of like, I think Once You Made My Neighbor hits on a lot of the issues of what made Fred Fred and what made him tick and the different underlying things and a deeper, you know, peel back the onion. But it sounds like this special on PBS was more like, hey, look at the genre or the wide range of people that Fred's affected. Mm-hmm. I guess
I'll tell you what, I think he hit the nail on the head. And it's a good comparison is that they complement each other, you know, and I know that I think you and I are the only ones here that have had the chance to see the documentary that's coming up. But having seen them both, the best way I could describe it, and Greg, feel free to, I guess you haven't seen the PBS one, but I would say that like the Won't You Be My Neighbor documentary that's coming up would be the main feature. And this PBS documentary would be like the special features on the side, you know, to where if I buy a documentary about Fred Rogers, I watch the main video and then I see these special features of other people that were affected by the show and affected by Fred's career. And again, this is nothing bad against that documentary on PBS. I thought it was very well done. There were just some parts of it that I felt like there were some holes there that could have been filled in a little more than they were.
It's to get the casual viewer interested in learning more and showing their kids the show if they never have. And anytime you become a super fan like we all are, I think you're kind of setting yourself up to be disappointed with the mainstream product that comes out because you've
That's
seen it
fair.
Before.
Yeah.
Or, mm-hmm. But I appreciate that they did it. And
yeah.
That's right. That's a good point.
That's a very fair point.
If you think about it, though, it's a kind of a funny point actually too. You get that was the PBS one was the freebie, And then the Won't You Be My Neighbor documentary, that's where people are going to drop $75 for the night and sit back and have some popcorn and relax.
Right.
Those are for the, those for the diehards.
No, I appreciate you saying that, because that's a good point to keep in mind, because sometimes I lose sight of the fact that I've seen a lot of these clips, and we've all seen a lot of these clips many times over. So as we see them again on these PBS special, for example, we're like, oh, okay, well, how about some of this new stuff? Where's the meat of this? But for 99% of the people watching, this is their first exposure to the neighborhood in probably several years, if not decades. And so this is new stuff to most of the people watching. So, yeah, I appreciate that. That's a very good point to keep in mind. So, Greg, again, I think you and I are the only ones here who have seen the documentary. Let me get a couple of comments from you on that. What were your thoughts after watching Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Well, I think coming into it, if you're a Fredhead, you're excited for this movie. But if you are just a fan of cinema, this is a documentary made by an Oscar winner. Morgan Neville won the Oscar for 20 Feet from Stardom a few years ago. An amazing documentary about people who are kind of like background singers, literally 20 feet away from the main act, and that won the Academy Award. And then did an amazing documentary called The Music of Strangers, which was focused on Yo-Yo Ma and his international posse, this coalition of musicians that come from different backgrounds and different instruments. And obviously, if you know Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, you know that he had a great connection with Yo-Yo Ma, and he was on the show as well. So it's only natural that this same filmmaker, Morgan Neville, has gone on to make this film. And when I met Morgan, by happenstance, a couple of years ago at Sundance, I talked about that because my organization, Heartland Film, gave the Music of Strangers our Truly Moving Picture Award, our industry honor, and I brought that up. And then, being a huge, Fredhead, I brought that up, and he gave me this weird look in my eye, like, "Do you know something that I don't know? Like, are you a mole?" Because he's like, "That's my next project," and it was almost like 2 years in anticipation now. But his production company, and actually Nicholas Ma, Yo-Yo Ma's son, is a producer on the film too. You can tell this was a labor of love. They've done amazing level of research. This is more about Fred's ideas and how the stereotypes of Fred being not masculine, maybe something from the past that is no longer relevant. I think that is all slowly changing right now too, with just his popularity in social media and everything too. But also, this movie nails everything on the head. And for a while, you think maybe this is a guy that doesn't have any flaws. But then I think he, especially talking about Francois Clemens and the whole his homosexuality and everything, and then how that worked with the show. That for me was like, okay, Fred was not perfect, and I don't think and he even admitted that through his writing and everything, that he's just this this very deep and simple guy like most people. And what do you think, Tim?
I tell you, if you know me on a personal level, you know that there's my handful of passions I have when it comes to pop culture, and one of those passions is The Karate Kid. And The Karate Kid, I can watch 1,000 times over, and I can smile from ear to ear as I watch it every time for the past 35 years. And with its kind of resurgence with this new show that's come out on YouTube, I binge watched that this week and smiled like I was 10 years old all over again. And that was the feeling, or a very similar feeling, watching Won't You Be My Neighbor. I sat there and I watched some of this, and without even realizing it, just had a huge smile on my face.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was there to watch, okay, I'm going to watch this documentary about this guy that I know a lot about. But I sat there and I watched and I smiled, and I kind of looked at the people around me a little bit and looked at the smiles on their faces and watched them dabbing their eyes with their tissues. And I think it was Danny, he and I were talking earlier, that I said I left that film with a full heart, with a heart that was just like I just wanted to go out and be good. And I hate it, it sounds completely cliche, but I left that just with a smile on my face and a feeling of just total and complete joy. And so as not as a film critic or as a movie professional, but just as a fan of the neighborhood and just a human being, it's impossible to watch this and not just leave with a heart of gold. You know, it's a fantastic documentary.
Yeah, and I think the thing I was taken by too, Tim, even right at the beginning, they start with really the first episode of The Neighborhood and King Friday and the Wall, and how and everyone almost like gasps because of how relevant that is even today with different thoughts that we have and our current political climate and stuff too. And that, you know, people might just think, oh, there's this show and it's, you know, Fred Rogers talking to 2 to 6 year olds, direct address and stuff too, and that almost this make believe bubble. But no, he was hitting big issues in a very fundamental way. And I think that's really what, you know, the world had, you know, the weight of the world did fall on Fred. And I think he had a lot of, the movie portrays this too, a lot of doubt. Maybe, am I supposed to be doing this? Am I doing a good job? Am I, and that's what I thought. I connected on a different level. And I think we put people on these pedestals and we idolize people and then we find out either it can be an act or there's something else too. But I think the more that we learn about Fred, the more that we realize that we can still relate to him, and he's as fantastic, but also as human as anybody else too. So I think he is almost that the anti-hero, the anti, you know, role model that we come to expect, and that society will, you know, spit out and for going against. If there's any whiff of going against the grain or something bad in their past or something too.
That's a good point, and I think that's how Fred would have liked us to think of him too.
Well, I don't want to talk about the film too much because I don't want to spoil any more than we need to. So
if it's not perfect, I'm going to be so disappointed. You've built it up so much. No, I'm excited. I'm glad it sounds so.
I'm glad you guys talked about what you did there, because that just, you know, reinforces in my mind how good I think it's going to be. So that's good.
It is. And I can say in just a few words, it's fantastic. It truly is. So I mentioned binge watching The Karate Kid this past week, or Cobra Kai, I suppose, is the true title. Speaking of binge watching, how about the Twitch marathon? Anybody tune into that?
Heck yeah. Yes,
sir.
Yeah.
To what extent? Aaron, how about you?
Yeah, well, not as much as I did the last time it was on Twitch. When was that? Last year? Last May or so. But I watched it quite a bit. I've got a Roku box, and there's a Twitch app. I watched it, you know, while I was just doing, you know, ironing and housework and that type of thing when I was home. And I always thought, you know, in the beginning, last year anyways, during the Twitch marathon, I turned the chat off. And this year, I didn't. And not that I wasn't on it at all last year, but I mean, I was on it a lot more this year. And there, it was interesting. It was kind of fun to be a part of that. It kind of, you know, share little tidbits, things. If I knew something, you know, I'd share a little thing, you know, something. And, you know, there were other people who were definitely big fans in there too, because they were sharing things that I wouldn't think other people would know. And long story short, I watched quite a bit of it this year.
Mm-hmm.
It was anybody a very else? Different vibe. It was a very different vibe this time around. Like the first time around, I think Twitch being, you know, mainly a video game, you know, discussion platform, there's a lot of sarcasm. Like it was really surprising to me that the company, Fred Rogers' company, made the decision to go through Twitch at all. I feel like there were other platforms out there. But I happen to be, in my work, a big fan of the live broadcast interactions where people can write in the moment. Like, I think there's an opportunity there. So, you know, once people understood, you know, what Fred was about, and that the other, you know, diehard fans weren't going to have mocking of him, and were able to respond in a way that was respectful, I think slowly it changed the conversation. And a big part of that, my favorite part of the whole marathon, was that Betty Averlin was so active in it. And, you know, she would throw out, you know, amazing histories, but also, you know, these powerful one, you know, she speaks to power, these powerful one-liners that really put people, not necessarily in their place, but like, oh, you know, you're really guiding me here, you know. So you were looking at the episode and what was going on there, but it was tying back to these individuals and their experiences and stuff that was happening in the moment. And I loved that aspect of it.
That was fantastic, I thought, too, Danny.
Yeah. Eric and Greg, did you guys tune in at all?
Yeah, I don't think I watched it quite as much as the previous year either, but not because I didn't want to, just it just didn't wasn't always didn't have the free time to do it, but it's just so cool to be able to flip it on, and chances are it's one I haven't seen or really didn't remember. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so cool to see something that really actually it almost does kind of pluck a memory from your childhood, and to see something you haven't seen for 40 years, you know.
You know, and I'll tell you what, that's one thing I can if it is a good place for a plug, is through Amazon right now, through the PBS Kids app or the PBS Kids channel through Amazon Video, you can actually you can see, what is it right now, up to like the first, I don't know, 30, 40 episodes? Are there more than that now, or is it into the hundreds?
I think, Tim, they're up to, at last I checked, in 1968 season you're talking about there?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're up to, I think there's 130 total. I think they're up to like
Fantastic.
90, about 90.
Fantastic. Yeah. So my understanding is, as long as this, I mean, this is going to be one platform for people to have access to these episodes. So I know there's always been a demand for a certain level of demand, I guess, for a gigantic box set, we'll say, or just constant access to be able to stream these episodes. And this is kind of a subscription based access to that, but it's access nonetheless. And so I think this is a step in the right direction, to where my understanding is, if the demand continues, more will become available. And if the demand is not there, then maybe they may back off a little bit. I don't know if that's the case, but my understanding is more demand, more will be available. So if this is something that, you know, for anybody listening, that you're interested in seeing more of these older episodes on an on-demand basis or on a regular basis, these are the kinds of things to tackle. You know, the same thing with this DVD set that was recently released. There were 30 episodes on there. My understanding is that if the demand is high, there may be more to come. This may not be, it may not be a lot of the older episodes. It may not be all new episodes, but maybe a mix of the two. But the demand needs to be there in order for these things to happen. And so the Twitch marathon, I think, is a step in the right direction. And then even further in that right direction is this access through PBS Kids on Amazon Video. Hey, well, let's shift gears. That's a good transition, yeah. Right there. Let's talk about merchandising. So in the 50th anniversary, with that being this year, we've seen a little bit more Fred Rogers, with a little bit more Neighborhood out there on the shelves. We've seen that in the past couple of years, like with the stickers and the notepads and the magnets and things like that. But I feel like this year that's increased a little bit more with the pops through Funko. We've got two or three different versions of that coming out, keychains, the plush. Let's talk about that a little bit. Greg, what are your thoughts on what you're seeing out there on shelves?
Yeah, I think the neat things are the Funkos that are coming out. And then I've never been a Funko guy. It's one of the trends, I thought, collectibles that'll go the way to Buffalo super quickly, like Beanie Babies or something, but they keep holding on.
Just wanted to chime in that I do believe Maxwell King's book is coming out,
yes.
What, next year?
I think later this fall.
Oh, later this fall. That's right.
I believe so.
And that's going to be...
That's the quote-unquote official biography of Fred Rogers.
That's right. Maxwell King, I do believe, a senior fellow at St. Vincent College, if I'm right. Mm-hmm. I think so. And that's obviously where the Fred Rogers Center is and that type of thing. But he's done lots and lots of work with Fred over the years. And I'm looking forward to that one for sure. Almost as much... Well, I should say no. I'm looking forward to this one more than I was really The Peaceful Neighbor. And that was a great book, too.
Yeah, Peaceful Neighbor, hands down, still my favorite book ever written about Fred Rogers. Still, easily, yeah. Without question.
Yeah, absolutely. So really looking forward to Max's.
What I'd like to do here at the end, you may not be expecting this, but we're gonna do this. This is gonna be like a lightning round. Okay, I've got four questions in front of me, very simple questions, and I'm gonna ask the question. I'll go through each of the four of you. You give your response. I'll give my response, and then we'll go to the next question. And once we're done with that, I have one final question for you all, and then we'll wrap up. So, question number one, and quite honestly, I've not given this a lot of thought myself, so it's not like I'm totally prepared for these either, although I think we all kind of have our gut reactions here. Question number one, favorite human character on The Neighborhood? Greg.
Oh, it's Mr. Rogers, yeah, hands down.
Okay, Eric.
So as not to repeat, Lady Aberlin.
Danny.
I'm going to repeat Lady Aberlin.
Oh, wow.
Aaron.
I'm going to, well, boy, this is, okay, not to repeat, Bob Trow.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Mr. Rogers, I think, is, if it came down to it, is everybody's favorite. I love Francois Clemens. Love him.
Yep.
Yep. Officer, as Officer Clemens, as himself, I love him. Favorite song from the neighborhood, Aaron.
There are many ways to say I love you.
Eric.
It's You I Like.
Danny.
The earlier version of that, I Like You As You Are. Exactly and precisely. Thank you. Turned out nicely.
Yeah, Greg.
Ooh. Probably my first bonding moment with my daughter was, I think, I Like You As You Are as well. So it's a close race between that and It's You I Like. But, that gets the edge.
I'll repeat with It's You I Like. That's still my favorite there. So favorite non-human character? Greg.
Probably Lady Elaine. I just always laughed at her voice and kind of stuff she get freaked out about, and almost that representation of you getting frustrated and stuff too. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Eric.
Gosh, I will say Corny.
If you don't mind me asking, why is that? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, I couldn't back it up. I would have said Daniel, but now that I've got so many. New thoughts with the way they've reinvented the character. I don't know. There's just something kind of funny, Corny, funny voice.
What kind of animal is Corny?
Oh, he's pictured some sort of a gopher or squirrel or something. I don't know.
Okay, this is a total sidebar here as well. Anybody have any thoughts there? What is Corny?
Well, he's definitely some sort of woodland creature.
rodent for sure. Right?
I think he's kind of a chipmunk, woodchucky kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like a hedgehog squirrel.
I think a hedgehog. Yeah. If you do a search on eBay for these old these puppets, I can't remember the name of the company that made them, but yes, thank you. That company had a hedgehog puppet that its face is very, very clearly the basis for Corny.
Yeah.
And so I am 100% on board with the fact that Corny is a hedgehog.
Absolutely. And that's I had forgotten all about that, Tim. Yes, that is actually, I'm pretty sure that is an actual puppet from that company, and they modified it.
I think so too.
Just like a lot of those model neighborhood things are from kits that you can buy. But then Daniel was a Stife puppet too from back in the 50s, I do believe.
Yes. Yes. I think you're right too. Who didn't do a non-human character? Danny, you didn't.
Yeah, I'm definitely going with Daniel, because every time his name was mentioned on the show, it felt like they were... I'm a Daniel.
Yes.
I was like, connected so
actually,
deep.
Did I cheat so saying Lady Elaine? Because she technically is a human, right? A human puppet?
Well, no. Like, she's a puppet.
Non-human.
Yeah, no. For this argument, she's a puppet.
Human in any intents and purposes. Okay.
Yeah, like a real human versus non-real human. Everybody get a chance to answer that one?
I didn't get a chance to answer that one. I've got a little bit of a different answer. I have one for sure, and then I really, really, honestly, really like all of the puppets in the neighborhood of Make Believe, the core puppets. We're not talking about James Michael Jones or Betty Okanek Templeton, the ones that came later. But because of the fact that every single puppet and the character is a little offshoot of Fred himself.
Yeah,
that's why I really, really like, and I think I laugh more at them now as an adult than I ever did. But anyways, for a simpler answer, I really, really, really think that King Friday is probably my favorite, only because he's just that pompous, almost bumbling ruler, and I think it's just, for comedic purposes, I really, really enjoy that character a lot. Yeah, and plus I really like watching Fred's face when he does that. When he does that voice, that character. So every time I see King Friday, I'm picturing Fred voice him, and I think that's even funnier.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah, for mine, I could go totally obscure the wide range of puppets. I am fascinated by Yo-Yo LaBelle, the alien that visited the neighborhood.
I
am blown away by that puppet. For some reason, it looks like one of those old Rocky boxing puppets, that with the arm where you pull the trigger and he boxes. So I honestly, I've looked on eBay a few times for like alien UFO puppets, trying to find the basis for that character. But no, based on the core, I got to go X the Owl. I'm a huge X fan.
Yeah.
I love X the Owl. I love his innocence and his curiosity and just his fun nature. So let's see. Last question of the lightning round, so to speak. Your favorite neighborhood moment? That's a very general question, but it could be anything from start to finish. What's your favorite moment from any neighborhood episode? That if you go back and watch something multiple times, or something that really touched you, what's something that just stands out to you?
Boy, as an adult, the assassination special where Betty's with Daniel and they're letting the air out of the balloon.
Yeah.
That will forever stick with me. And as a kid, I mean, gosh, how do you choose? It's so difficult. You, as an adult, it's hard not to go to all the dramatic stuff. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there were plenty of playful moments. I always liked it when they visited the Browns and did the marionette.
Greg,
as a kid, probably the crayon factory, and actually. But as an adult, the Jeff Erlinger appearance.
Yeah.
In song.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Eric.
Oh, boy. Let's see. Have to say the Coco Gorilla segment struck me when I think when it first aired is when I saw it. And I was an adult already, and I was kind of reinvigorated with my interest in the show and how unpolished and natural that was, you know. Mm-hmm. And then again, another one I didn't appreciate until I was an adult was there's an interaction with Daniel Tiger and Lady Aberlin where I think it's a fairly late episode where he, just out of the blue, it's not even relevant to the main story, I don't think, but he, when they sing the duet about Daniel wonders if he's a mistake.
Mm.
And and it was very, very touching, and it obviously wasn't a new sentiment that had never been brought up before in different ways. It was a little startling to hear one of the character puppets go that deep and dark, kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, you know, the interaction between them is so perfect. Off the top of my head, those are two big ones.
Aaron, what do you think?
Real quick, I'm just going to do one as a kid, one as an adult. But as a kid, I loved anything that happened behind the scenes when he'd show the model neighborhood, when he'd show how Trolley worked, when he showed how to voice puppets, anything like that. I really, really enjoyed that. As an adult, I like watching scenes where Fred is genuinely having fun. It's always been said how much of how big of a sense of humor the man had and a sense of the whimsy. So like, scenes where he's doing the, you know, head, shoulders, knees and toes, you know, with Ella Jenkins, and he's messing it up, but he's just having a blast doing it. Anything where he is laughing and just, you know, off the cuff, having fun. I get a kick out of that now as an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are very similar to the responses I'd have. You know, from entertainment value, I love the breakdance the scene that he does because I'm a lifelong fan of, you know, old school hip hop and, you know, growing up listening to the Beastie Boys and Run DMC and all of that and being really involved and really fascinated by the whole B-boy culture. But, you know, seeing Mr. Rogers of all people trying to attempt some of these breakdance moves, I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, and that's the key word is he's trying. As awkward as I'm sure that was for him, and you know, for most people to try some of those moves, they would be mortified. You know, who's watching me? Who's seeing me? He's in front of cameras, in front of all of these viewers, putting himself out there, trying these things. I love it. As an adult, the Jeff Erlinger, that whole scene.
Yeah.
Every time I see it, it makes the hair on my arm stand up. I look at it, and I may have talked with a few of you about this before or mentioned it online, but that scene hits home for me because it makes me realize that in that moment, Fred had cameras and he had crew members and he had all of these people around him, and it is so evident that nobody else mattered in that moment to him than Jeff Erlinger.
Yeah, good point.
And it was just that one-on-one eye contact, and he – he couldn't have cared less about the other dozens or so of people in the room besides that one person he was talking with. And that really speaks a lot to me about the kind of person he was, the kind of show he had, and the kind of message that he
could. Can I just piggyback on that real quick since you brought it up?
Absolutely.
And at the same time, the only person that mattered to Jeff was Fred in that scene too.
Yeah. That's a good.
I was going to say it's very impressive he was able to get so much information out of a kid who must have been nervous to be on camera and to talk about such deep things, and it's a testament to how comfortable he probably made people when he was talking to them.
Oh, and then obviously loving that, and then one of the most viral videos online is when Jeff returns to get, to introduce him for the induction in the TV Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And do you notice how Fred goes to the stage on that clip? He doesn't
jumps up
stairs.
On the stage.
Yeah. He doesn't quietly move to the side and go up and shake hands. He cannot get on that stage fast enough. And that, to me, I love watching that, because, again, in that studio, in that auditorium, nobody matters in that moment but those two people to each other, and it just gives you such a great feeling.
I
appreciate you guys, all four of you, very much, just for your different perspectives and your different thoughts, just different places in life. I think we all come from very different but very similar backgrounds, in the sense that we all grew up with an appreciation for the neighborhood. We all grew up with those lessons that have become enough of a part of us that now, as adults and as parents and as educators and professionals, those are things that are ingrained in us. And I think that's a huge part of why this resurgence of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is in our faces right now. You could say 50th anniversary, and it's not that big a deal for a lot of things. But I think this year we're seeing that. We're seeing it a lot in social media. We're seeing it a lot through products. We're seeing it through films. That Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood has been the butt of jokes for many years. And I think finally it's coming back out, and people are realizing just how much of an impact that small program for kids had on them as they were developing and as they were growing. So I think the four of you, myself included, the five of us, are a testament to that. I think there's a lot of people out there in the same situation we're in where – we take the message. It's not a matter of sitting down and watching a kid's show. It's a matter of sitting down and absorbing a message, much like a person would absorb at church on a Sunday morning or through a motivational speaker. There's so much to absorb there, and there's so many layers to dissect that it's just a phenomenal program that goes so far beyond being just another kid's show on TV. So, all four of you guys, I really appreciate you taking the time to have this discussion tonight. It's been a lot of fun. I wish we could do this for about another 12 hours. guys, again, thank you to all four of you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks
for everything you do, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
You're the best.